Genesis chapter 29. Sometimes we wonder why we spend time looking at these things. Oh, these are just, this is so long ago. But what we realize is so many times it's so important to understand what the New Testament says to know what the Old Testament says. There are so many things that are spoken of in the New Testament that without an understanding of the Old Testament, it's almost impossible to fully understand what they're talking about. In almost every book in the New Testament, there is a reference back to the events of the Old Testament. Many times to the book of Genesis, sometimes to the book of Exodus. Jesus quoted the book of Deuteronomy 3 times when he was being tempted by Satan. So the things that are written back here are things that are important for us to understand the New Testament better. The Old Testament is, in many ways, the New Testament in shadow of what's going to come. And so we look at these things and we learn from them. And of course, a lot of the things that happened then are difficult for us to really understand fully because of the fact that the cultural differences. Things were so different then that we can't understand, I guess we can understand it technically, but we can't get our minds around what it would be like to live in those times. It was so very different. They had none of the modern conveniences that we have. They had none of the things, even running water, they didn't have. And a lot of those things that we take for granted that we don't even think about, well, maybe here in Faraday we do when we go turn the water on and it doesn't work. But most places in the United States, we don't ever think about it. But it reminds us sometimes when the power goes out that, oh, I wonder what it would have been like to live like that all the time. And yet that's the way these people live. Jacob is continuing his journey. Remember, his mother and father had sent him to go back to his family, to his kinfolk, to find a wife. They did not want him to marry one of the Canaanites like his brother Esau had. And he comes to the land of the people of the east. Those are the people that are his people, that's his area up in, near Haran. And so he gets there and he finds a well. And there are sheep around it. And here's a case of what we might say is some necessary implication in these verses. Because he sees the sheep there, and they're there by the well to be watered. And in verse 4, he says to them, "My brethren, whence be ye?" And they said, "Of Haran we are." I doubt he's talking to the sheep. There must have been some people with those sheep, some shepherds watching the sheep. Even though they're not specifically mentioned there, we understand that if Jacob is talking to these people, they must have been there. So it's interesting sometimes how those things, that necessary implication that we use in other areas to help us understand God's teaching, and we see it there in a place where this doesn't have anything to do with doctrine. Sometimes when we're teaching the idea of a necessary implication, people can't wrap their minds around it because it's in a doctrinal area, like when we talk about singing or something of that effect, and that implies then that that's the only thing authorized and those kinds of things. They don't like that because that's a doctrinal thing that they're doing something different. But when we find it in a place like this, well, they can say, well, of course there were people there, because it's not something that their feelings are all wrapped up in. And so we see those kinds of things, and it can be helpful to understand the principle in an area where we're not emotionally attached to the conclusion. And so we see here, there's a stone over the mouth of this well. Not sure why. Was it there to keep people from falling in the well? Keep accidents from occurring? Was it there to keep other animals out other than the sheep? Didn't want the water source, didn't want other animals to drink up the water. Was it there to keep things from dying and falling in, or from other contaminants falling in the well? All of those things are possibilities. Possibly there to keep someone from stealing the water. Or whatever the reason, they had this big stone over the well's mouth to keep it shut up. Maybe just to keep it from evaporating. to keep it from being lost if it was a deserty type area. And so Jacob comes to them, asks them where they're from, and then he asks them if they know Laban. That's who Rebekah's brother, of course, she had sent him. Go back and stay with my brother Laban. And so he asks about Laban, and they know him. And he says, well, how's he doing? Is he okay? Is he well? And they said, yes. And then they noticed that, look, there comes his daughter. There's Rachel. That's Laban's daughter. Here she comes. And she's coming to the well. And so he says, well, look, it's the middle of the day. Why have you got all the sheep here? Go ahead and give them some water and then get out there and let them eat. And the idea here, we need to understand, these weren't grown men. These were probably shepherd boys. David, King David, before he became king, he was a shepherd boy. And he was one like these boys would have been. Youngsters that were just out there watching the sheep, but didn't have the kind of adult authority that an adult would have had. Because obviously, for a stranger to walk up in the midst of a group of people and tell them what to do, that'd be kind of out of place. But if it was some juveniles, and also they said, well, we can't until somebody moves the stone off of the well. So they weren't big enough and strong enough to move that stone away from the well to let the sheep drink. So these weren't grown men who had full-grown, mature strength. These were youngsters, most likely, in this case. And Rachel also would have been young. We don't know how old, but she wasn't a 25 or 30-year-old woman, most likely. She was a youngster. Maybe in her early teenage years, maybe she wasn't even a teenager. She might have only been 10 or 9 or 11. We don't know for sure how old she was, but she was just keeping the sheep. And so they explain they can't. Well, when he, as Rachel comes up, and they all get there, and he sees Rachel, and he sees the sheep with her and everything, he says, okay, well, I'm going to move this stone out of the way so y'all can give the sheep some water. And so he takes the lead in getting that stone put away from the mouth of the well so that they can get the water. And then notice at the end of verse 10, he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. That's very interesting. If we remember back to the situation with Isaac's bride-to-be, Rebekah, remember the servant that went looking. The servant, in that case, certainly didn't water her sheep or anything like that. He asked her to give him some water, and his prayer to God was, if she'll offer to water the camels too, that'll be the one. Well, here we have the other side of the coin. The man is taking the servanthood role. He's serving her, showing his care and compassion for this family member. Verse 11 mentions that Jacob kissed Rachel. This was not a sexual type kiss. This wasn't a romantic kiss. This was the kiss of greeting that a family member would give to another family member upon meeting them. One of the ways we know that is a little later on when he meets Laban, he kisses Laban too. It's kind of a family thing. And I know many of our families may not greet with kisses today. Certainly, in some places in the world, they still do, and they even greet people they're not related to with a kiss. But that was the case in this situation. And he wept. Of course, this wasn't weeping for sorrow, but weeping for joy. Glad that he had found his family, his kinfolk, that he had been looking for. And of course, when he told her who he was, and he says that he was her father's brother, and of course, we understand that doesn't mean that he was her uncle, but that he was a relative of her father. In fact, what we see is, as we look at this relationship, on his mother's side, Rebekah and Laban being brother and sister, Jacob and Rachel were first cousins. On his father's side, that would be Isaac's side, his grandfather, Abraham, and his grandmother, Sarah, were brother and sister to Laban's grandfather. So he's double kin, or even triple kin, to Rachel. They're about third cousin or fourth cousin on that side there. So they're on down the line, not close, close kin on that side, but first cousins on his mother's side. And it was not at all uncommon. There weren't as many people to choose from back in that day, and there weren't some of the complications of close kin intermarrying that we have today, with some of the genetic difficulties that we have today with it. But it was very common at that time for people to marry someone that was a little closer in relation than what we today would generally be comfortable with. But he comes to Laban, and he stays with Laban for about a month. And Laban welcomes him in. You know, your family welcomed him in, let him stay there a month. And I'm sure that Jacob wasn't just an obnoxious house guest. I'm sure he helped out around the place with some things, because in verse 15, Laban says, since you're my brother, you're my relative, you shouldn't be serving me for nothing. What do you want? What are your wages going to be? What do you want me to pay you? I'll give you something in return for you working with me. Now remember, Jacob was supposed to stay until his mother called him. She was going to call him back when Esau had calmed down and settled down. He never got that letter or that message to come back. He didn't ever get that, and as far as we know, never saw his mother again. But here, Laban asks him what he wants. Well, Laban had two daughters. We've already met Rachel. This is the first time it's mentioned that he had a second. Her name was Leah. And Leah was older than Rachel. Rachel was the younger one. Neither one of them were yet married. And it says that Leah was tender-eyed. And I've heard a lot of different explanations for that. Some have said that tender-eyed means that it'd make your eyes hurt to look at her. But on the other hand, some have said that Solomon was also described as being tender-eyed, and it just meant that they had delicate features, that they were very, very, maybe not robust and strong and healthy kind of, but a little more tender than another, and yet still could have been very beautiful. I don't know the case in this particular thing for sure, but I've heard both, and it is interesting. It says that she was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored, which may indicate the idea that one was kind of sickly a little and the other one was a little healthier. Maybe she had a little more meat on her bones. She wasn't just skin and bones sick all the time. But whatever the case, for whatever reason, maybe just because he had met her first, maybe had something to do with their ages, maybe something about their looks, whatever it is, maybe their personalities were different. But for whatever reason, verse 18 says that Jacob loved Rachel. He loved that younger daughter. What would you do for somebody you loved? Oh, I mean, we do a lot of things. My wife, who hates liver, was telling the kids today that during the pregnancy she may have to eat some liver, and she said all the things parents do for their kids because they love them. I have to eat liver, and she doesn't like liver. Oh, what suffering that will be. For those of you who like liver, you won't understand that. But so she said, but what would you do for somebody you love? What limits would you put? Well, I wouldn't do that. Well, here's what Jacob says. Because he loved Rachel, he says, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel. 7 years without pay. Now, of course, he's going to get room and board. He'll have a place to stay and food to eat. He's not going to starve to death during that time. But he's going to have no salary, no income of any kind for 7 years in order to have this woman as his wife. I don't know, guys. Would you have worked without pay for 7 years for your wife? Don't answer that. You'll get in trouble now. Don't answer that. But that's what Jacob said he was willing to do. He was willing to work for her. The idea of the man giving the wife's family something, a dowry, it's often called, paying, in essence, to have the privilege to marry this woman is a very much an Eastern concept that we've done away with that. About the only thing he has to buy is an engagement ring, right? That's pretty much it. And then her family has to pay for the wedding. In our society today, the bride's family's got to pay for it all. But at this day and age, the way it worked was, you had to bring something to the table. You wanted a wife, you were going to have to give something of value for that wife. Well, Jacob didn't have anything to give. All right, I know he had the blessing of Isaac. He was going, and he had the birthright from his father. He wasn't going to get that until after his father died, so he wasn't going to get his inheritance. He didn't have anything to give. He apparently was here pretty much with just the clothes on his back. He didn't have much. And so all he did have was his labor. And so he said, 7 years worth of labor for her. What a dowry that is. But it shows the kind of love that he had for her. Laban said, well, it's better that I give her to you than to some stranger, somebody else. So stay with me and work. So Jacob did that. And he worked there for those 7 years. And verse 20 tells us that because of his love for her, those 7 years that he served seemed but a few days. That's kind of paradoxical to me. I don't know about you, but when you've wanted something really bad, something you've really longed for, and you just, it was the thing you desired more than anything else, did it seem like the time flew by? To me, it always seemed like the time, it just took forever for that to get, the kids are like, why can't Christmas hurry up and get here? What? How much longer till Christmas? I can't wait till Christmas. That seems to be our attitude most of the time. When we want something so badly, we just can't wait. Every day seems like it took a week, and every week seems like 3 months. And we just can't wait, want it right now. But Jacob shows the depth of his love for her in that he's patient for those 7 years. Maybe the fact that he got to see her every day and be around her regularly, maybe that helped the time to pass a little better than if she'd have been out of sight and out of mind. But for whatever reason, he was able to go through that 7 years, and it just seemed like a few days to him because of the love that he had toward her. Then finally the time came, time was up. 7 years had passed, and he came to Laban and he said, all right, I've done it. Now I want my wife. Well, you know the old saying, what goes around comes around, and you get what you give. Well, Jacob's about to get some of what he gave, and I know we're probably somewhat familiar with this story. That night when it came time for the wedding, they gathered together, they had a big feast, and in the evening time, he took Leah, his daughter, and he brought her into Jacob instead of Rachel. Now, tonight, with all these bright lights, it might be kind of hard to get away with that kind of a deception. But remember, they didn't have all those electric lights. They didn't have all those. And there's a very good chance that in the darkness of a tent, when someone comes in the dark, it'd be rather hard to tell who it was. I mean, you might be able to tell the difference between a man and a woman. And if they spoke, maybe you could tell some difference in their voice if you knew them well. But two sisters might be kind of hard to tell them apart in the dark at night. And so Jacob didn't recognize it until the next morning. When he woke up, he found out, this is Leah. This is the wrong sister. This isn't the one I wanted. And so he came out and he talks to Laban, and he said to Laban, what have you done to me? Well, we might think, well, Jacob's just getting a little bit of his just desserts. He's been tricking people, tricked Esau out of the birthright, tricked Isaac into giving him the blessing, and now he's getting a little bit of it back. He got the wrong daughter. Well, Laban explains, it's not our custom. We don't let the younger daughter marry before the older daughter. You're in bad shape then if you've got an older sister that just nobody wants to marry, I guess. You just never get to get married. But he thought, I'm sure, that in 7 years' time, surely somebody will come along that wants to marry Leah. And so he didn't think about that being a problem. But the 7 years was up and Leah still wasn't married. So he said, well, here we go. Just let Jacob marry her. Well, so Laban says, tell you what, you go ahead and stay with her for a week, and then at the end of that week, I'll let you marry the other daughter too, and then you can serve me 7 more years for her. I wonder if that trickster type personality ran in that family. Rebecca was the one that came up with the idea for Jacob to come up with this deception. And we're going to see a little later on that Leah and Rachel have a little bit of deceptive qualities in them too. I wonder how much of that was a trained family trait. But he did that, and he gave Rachel to him, and then he's going to serve another 7 years. At least he got his wife before having to serve those 7 more years this time around. What a thing it would have been if he'd had to serve another 7 years and wait 7 more years before getting to marry the girl that he wanted. And remember, then the idea here of there being having two wives, and that's so counterintuitive to us as Christians when the New Testament teaches us that every man should have his own wife and every wife should have her own husband. And the idea of this man having two wives, and we think, what kind of peace could there possibly be in that household with not just two wives but two sisters? Later on in the Law of Moses, one of the laws that Moses will give is that a man is not to be involved with a mother and a daughter, nor is he supposed to take two sisters as a wife, because he says that would vex the first wife to take her sister. And it certainly did in this case. It caused a lot of problems. There are reasons that God gives the rules and laws that He gives. He doesn't just pull them out of a hat and say, this is the law. This is the law. He has good reason for it. He knows humanity because He created humanity. He knows how human beings behave and how they react. And He knows about their emotional interactions with each other. And He knows what things destroy relationships and what things build relationships. And that's the reason that He started from the beginning. He didn't give Adam two wives or four wives. He gave Adam one wife. And He didn't give Eve two husbands or four husbands. He gave her one husband. And He said, this is the way it's supposed to be. And Jesus points back to that. He says, from the beginning, this was the way it was supposed to be. One husband and one wife. Because you start getting these harems built up, you get into all sorts of problems. They don't like each other all the time. You build all sorts of problems for yourself when you do something like that. Well, Jacob not only took these two wives, but Laban let Leah have a servant, a maid, Zilpah, and he let Rachel have a maid, Bilhah, to be her handmaid. And so Jacob eventually is going to wind up with not two women, but four women that he's involved with and that he has children by. And you can imagine some of the difficult relationships. And what do you suppose Christmas dinner would be like, sitting around the table with four wives and all of those half-brothers and sisters? I mean, that's a scary thought. And yet that's what Jacob had going on in his family because of all of these things that had happened here. Well, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, He opened her womb. But Rachel was barren for a long time. Leah conceived. She had a son. She called his name Reuben. Reuben means literally, see a son. She wasn't real creative with her names for her children. Kind of like that when I had a dog, I got a puppy for my 6th birthday. I named him Pups. Seemed like a good name for a puppy. But I wasn't real creative with my names for him, and she apparently wasn't with hers either. But she says, surely the Lord has looked on my affliction. Now my husband will love me. Well, it didn't really happen that way. But she conceived again. She had another son. And she says, because the Lord has heard me when I was hated, He's given me this son. And she called him Simeon, which means hearing. The Lord's heard me, she said. So the Lord is hearing me. Then she gave a birth to a third son. And she said, now this time my husband will be joined to me because I've borne him three sons. And she called his name Levi, which means joined. And so she's had these three sons now. And then she has one more, a fourth son. She says, now all I praise the Lord. And she called his name Judah. And then she didn't give birth to any others. And Judah means literally praise. So finally, instead of trying to please her husband, she's just going to praise God for what she's received from him. And she's going to enjoy those children. And these four sons, this is not, it says she stopped or left off bearing. It doesn't mean she's not ever going to have any more. We'll find out later she will have another child. But here she has these four and then not any for a while. But as we look at these situations with these family interactions, and we look at Jacob and his deceit, and then he goes and he gets deceived, we see how the sin in people's lives causes problems over and over again. We do something to someone else, and then they do it back to us, and all of that goes back and forth. It can be all kinds of difficulties. It can make life unpleasant for everyone that's involved. As Christians, we can learn from these things not to repay evil for evil, but the New Testament teaches us to overcome evil with good. And in fact, to treat our enemies with kindness and heap coals of fire on their head. That we can do things and pray for our enemies. Pray for those that persecute us and misuse us instead of trying to get even with them. I saw a tract one time. It was how to get ahead without getting even. Sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that we can get even with somebody. Jacob had tricked Esau. Now he comes and he's tricked by Laban. It'd be very easy for him to say, well, I'm going to get Laban back for that. As far as we know, he doesn't. He doesn't try to take revenge on Laban for the things that Laban tricked him for. He gets very frustrated with Laban, as we'll see in some later passages as we continue studying this. But he doesn't try to get even with him. He had that to his credit. Even though he had some flaws, he did have that one good characteristic about him. When we think about for our young people, what's ahead for them? What are we going to teach them about love and about marriage? And how are we going to prepare them to be a good husband or wife? And I know some say, well, you know, my kids are already 50 years old and married, and what am I going to worry about that? Well, all of us have somebody in our lives that's young enough that they're not married yet, and we want to encourage them to make good choices. We want to encourage them not to fall into some of the traps that perhaps we fell into, or that perhaps someone else we know fell into, another family member fell into, or just the traps that society in general follows. What are we going to teach them about love and marriage? We need to share with them the things from the Scriptures about how good marriages work and the problems that are caused when somebody's not following God's plan. We can teach them those things. We can help them to have a better life in the future. We can help them not to make mistakes and have problems that others have been burdened with. Perhaps some of us here tonight have been in a situation where we got back thrown on us something that perhaps we had done to someone else in the past. Maybe we'd done something and it came back to bite us. It came back to harm us. We may need to repent of that. We may need to turn from that kind of behavior. and not do those things. There's a reason that God condemns those kinds of behaviors. He knows the harm it causes. And He knows that it will not only hurt others, but it will hurt us as well. God never gives commandments, rules, regulations of any kind just because. He does it because it's what's best for us. He does it because He knows it's what will give us the best life that we can have here on this earth, as well as eternal life. If you have a need tonight to respond to the invitation, perhaps you haven't been living your life as you should. Maybe as Christians married to Christ, maybe you haven't been faithful to Him. Maybe you're looking for other spouses out there in the world, looking for somebody else or something else to take the place of Jesus Christ in your life. Don't let that happen. Stay with Him. Perhaps you have some other need, some other concern that's bothering you tonight. If you need to respond to the invitation, please do so as we stand and as we sing.